my work as a choreographer, it was highly, highly designed. So, you know, there weren't like improvised sections. It was all choreographed. And when I'm making an interactive piece, there's a certain letting go that has had to happen as part of the process, where I have a system and, you know, I've been embracing ideas about how we don't really have all of the control that we think we do.
In this episode of the Creating New Spaces podcast, I'm talking with Nora Gibson about an interactive installation called The Dream. I'm sorry, I need to apologize for my terrible audio. I used the wrong microphone for the recording, and I haven't been able to 100% fix this in post. It was a good reminder that I needed to test recordings before each interview starts. Nora does give a really detailed explanation of the piece, but my summary of it is that the participants in a dream wear a EEG headset to animate a particle system that's projected onto translucent screens in a room bathed in pale blue light. Nora's background is in contemporary ballet and choreography. For a decade, Nora led the Nora Gibson Contemporary Ballet Company. She talks a little bit about some of the collaborations she actually did during this time as well. She's only just recently moved into working with technology and installation practice. During the conversation, we talk about how interactive works can provide feedback to participants. She also discusses the interconnections that happens between dancers and the audience, and how this actually sort of works sometimes in installations where participants have connections as well between their bodies. One of the other things we discuss, and it's actually the quote that I pulled out to start the whole interview with, is about how interactive works as systems for people to experience. Also, The Dream has recently been featured in Ars Electronica. Nora, welcome to the Learning by Working podcast.
Thank you.
What's it like to experience The Dream?
So The Dream is an interactive piece, and it's an atmosphere. It's an atmosphere that allows people to connect with themselves in a mental and physical way. And it is a space that allows people to allow their own mind and bodies to provide a space of repose for other people. So when you walk in, there are multiple translucent screens that appear to be floating. They're suspended from plexiglass rods. So it's just this ethereal screen structure that's hanging in the middle of the room. There's ambient pale blue lighting. There's a comfortable seat to sit, or multiple seats for other people to sit. There is a small EEG headset, which is a sensor that reads electrical activity in your brain. And you can put the headset on and sit back and allow the activity of your brain to animate the particle system that is projected onto these translucent screens in the middle of the room. So you are sitting, reclining, bathed in blue light, and gazing upon your own electrical activity of your brain, watching swirling particles from the particle system. And it's meant to be, in some ways, mindless. It's not supposed to provoke or be didactic in any way. It's an experience that is simply a feedback system that is supposed to induce incredible relaxation. And the more you sink into the experience, perhaps the more relaxed you become. And you are, in fact, with your own body and your own mind, creating this atmosphere for other people. So other people can sit down, and even though they are not directly animating the exhibit, it's interactive for them too on a non-technical level, because they are maybe also, their bodies and minds are invited to also sink into the experience. So it's the experience is meant to be a manifestation of how we do affect other people in our environments, that we can bring a particular energy and mindset into a room, and that there's a caretaking, basically. So through it's a very minimal, very calm and very, very ultra minimal experience, a very ethereal experience of just light particles and relaxation. And it's basically an experience in self-observation and just being able to acknowledge the caretaking of others we can do just simply with our energy. And and it's celebrating, the value of this kind of state of the body and mind.
What are some of the sort of words people are using after they experience it?
The comment that I most hear when people have experienced it is, "I could sit here forever." I consider that to be the highest compliment ever. I really want people to enjoy a moment where they don't feel compelled to do or make effort, that I the feeling of it is enough to just take a pause and experience the moment.
It helps people to almost return to like a default state, is maybe the way to think about it.
Yes, and hopefully a default state that's positive. Often, so, you know, our brain's default state when our default mode network is active, unfortunately, we often experience a lot of negative thoughts, a lot of negative thinking, catastrophizing. Mind wandering is not always the most pleasant activity or experience. So I am really trying to facilitate, you know, it's like having something to look at, like this being in this feedback system where a feedback loop where you're watching the effects of your brain activity, and then you're receiving the effects and processing that, and then seeing them still being in this feedback loop of an experience, I think is really conducive to kind of emptying the mind of racing thoughts.
We talked a little bit about this already, but what are the core ideas you're exploring in this piece?
Yes, the core ideas are, number one, the underrated value of rest and repose, that sleep, for instance, sleep, dreaming, these are all incredibly important activities that we do, and that, you know, we're very hard on ourselves capitalist societies. We're so hard on ourselves. We say things like, "I'll rest when I die," you know, like that's like, what about all the good work you're doing at pruning your neuronal system or regulating your metabolism, or regulating other systems within your body, or it's a healing process for the body. Your immune system is repaired during sleep. I could go on. And dreaming is a deeply researched area. The reasons for dreaming could be quite varied. It could be that we're it could have to do with the way we process memory, shift memory into long-term memory, or consolidate memories. It could be where we're building predictive models, just like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, who knows how many predictive models, which, you know, allows us to survive better, to be more creative people in our waking life. I mean, there's so many there. So there's so much value, and it's really underrated. And so this exhibit celebrates that. It places value in that. And it also allows people to use their own body as a conduit to facilitate this experience, not just for themselves, but for other people. So I wanted to create an interactive experience that was visually incredibly calming, incredibly just relaxing and minimal and ethereal and lovely, really. And and allow people to use their bodies to facilitate that experience for themselves and others.
A few things I might come back to with that, Denora, but something that's just sort of clicked for me as you're talking, because one of the things I was sort of interested in is in your practice, you've moved from a spot where it's you as a dancer has been wearing the brain sensor, the way I think about it. And then in actual fact, what you then sat there and what I'm hearing possibly is you sat there and done a whole, it's actually a really enriching experience for yourself. And you wanted people to, other people to start to experience that.
It did start as self-reflection, certainly. And because I have spent my life as a dancer, I feel like I do some of my artistic values are very much rooted in a particular, a deep relationship between my body and my mind. You know, this is, I see these entities as, in collaboration with each other. I don't see them as dualistic. And in fact, if anything, I see the mind and body as something that functions in a relational way with other people, with your environment. So there's your brain, your body, the environment, other people. I think that mind is a very large concept and incorporates all of these elements, and it's relational to all of them. So it began with as I became more interested in technology and shifting my practice into that area. I was interested in the functionality of my brain, not just as the physical organ, but of course how my brain as my body is interacting with the concept of mind. So this was something that I was observing my own patterns, researching what that meant, doing quite a bit of research on the brain. I've been an intern at a neuroscience lab. Like, I really got quite serious about this. And I felt that this was something that you could either experience on your own or and then I realized, like, oh, this is the perfect way to express these ideas, to allow one person to be the conduit to facilitate the experience for other people, because I think that in a non-technical sense, this is what we're doing with each other all of the time.
Interesting. Some of my pure pleasure with my own practice is the moment when a piece is set up and I'm with it by myself. And I can occasionally sit there and do a whole, am I making this for me to reflect on myself, or am I making this for an audience? And it's interesting in terms of that.
Yeah. I think that if you're a lifelong learner and you're an artist, then your art is a tool for you to continue learning. It's part of your own learning and discovery process. So yes, of course, I see dissemination of work and having a connection to other people, of course, is very important, because we don't live on an island. But I do absolutely think that the first part of that process is that we are learning, we are growing, just ourselves, and our art is a tool with which to do that.
Mm-hmm. As a dancer, what are you moving to installation practice?
Yeah. So as a dancer, I was very heavily ballet trained and I love ballet, but, my attitude toward my work, when I was choreographing, because I ran a contemporary ballet company for about 10 years, I was not interested in ballet as a historical relic. I was interested in ballet as simply a language in the way that almost like this is an empty container with which you could talk about anything. So as an artist living now, I wanted to talk about ideas that are interesting to me now, living now. Yeah, so my work was often geared toward, I think, more contemporary subjects, where I was working also with algorithms or things that like a lot of folks in the new media area are working in. So I started to have collaborations with people who are either electronic musicians or I reached out to people in the STEM field. So I sometimes collaborated with scientists or mathematicians. And so it's just that, one experience that I had was working with a mechanical engineer and, we used accelerometers on the dancers and we took data and I was making choreography based in patterns that we were finding in the data. And so it's experiences like that, working with electronic composers, working with people using technology that made me want to wear that hat too. So I started doing that. And what made my practice shift was that I really loved how technology allowed me to do things that felt like total magic. So I started to move away from the more, I guess, concrete or physical realm of bodies on the stage. And the medium, it just changed me as a person. So I still sometimes, of course, use dance. I very thoroughly am always using my body in some way in the work because I work a lot with sensors. But I have been changed through this medium quite a bit. And now I'm working more in the realm of new media and installation.
And what's this interesting with the dream, as you explained it, that it's moving away from actually using your body or a dancer's body to the participants' bodies as well. And that's just a really interesting shift in terms of movement practice, the way to think about it.
Well, yes. And this is also, I'm very conscious of this shift as well, because over time, especially as I shifted from being a performer to choreographing and, I really stopped needing to be center stage. I did not need, psychologically, I just didn't need the spotlight on me anymore. And I started to become more interested in what is the experience itself. And also, I started to have a very, very different idea about the subject of virtuosity and what that could mean. It's like I'm not necessarily trying to be like the best coder on the planet that's the virtuosity for me is in being able to pinpoint, like, if philosophically I'm trying to say something specific, then I'm using the tools, any tool at my disposal, to try to convey that message as eloquently and articulately and beautifully as I can. And to me, that's how I've redefined virtuosity for myself.
The other thing thinking this, you're now working solo, aren't you? So you've gone from a sort of classic performance collaborative practice, which you're talking about, mm-hmm. working with different to a single artist, mm-hmm. working with technology, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. it's interesting in itself, Nora.
Yes, I'm not sure where my travels are going to take me in that regard. I think it's really astute that you thought of that aspect. I actually would like to work more collaboratively with people. As a choreographer, I worked collaboratively with scientists or electronic musicians, and I'd love to continue doing that as I go forward. So,
getting back to the dream piece, what was the process of creating it?
Mm.
How did this all start?
It grew quite naturally out of just how much I was observing my own brain activity. I started just experimenting with, so I was very conscious of the fact that, you know, my body is constantly in motion. And, as a dancer, this is a beautiful concept. It's like, wow, movement truly is the hallmark of being alive. Yes, if we're moving, we're alive. So, I think that this is just such a plain and simple fact. And it's so, like, I don't know, there's something kind of profound for me in that. And so I wanted to, I started experimenting with different types of visual effects that I could attach to the brain activity. And then it started to become like, well, what do you want to say? You know, what do I want to say with it? What kind of an experience do I want? Am I going to be responsible for creating? So, I know a lot of people use particle systems, but for this piece, it was the right visual effect. I use a nice, physics effect so that the particles are, you know, like they seem very organic, like splashing water almost. And so there's something kind of a natural element, like that was important to me because my aesthetic is not particularly hard. It's not like hard technology, sometimes it can feel or look hard and cold, and that can be an incredible, very cool aesthetic. It's just not mine. So I wanted it to have a more organic, natural feel. It is like artificial nature, I guess. And that's where we are with that.
Interesting, as you talked, you had the same sort of tone that I sometimes have about particles. I sometimes feel one of those hugely overused things in our area, mm-hmm. but they do have their mm-hmm. place when you start to think consciously about the nature of what you want and how they work. And this is probably one of those examples where it's really a considered use of that rather than, this is a bit of a gimmick. This feels interactive.
Yeah, I really am a big believer in that. There just are no bad ideas. We're gifted with just a whole history of wonderful ideas from other artists and thinkers that came before us. And so, you know, I think that the only problem is when we think we're doing something totally new. And it was like, no, they did that in the 1920s, you know, like there's nothing worse than that sort of blind spot. So, but I think it's beautiful to be able to recycle ideas. It's just, you just have to be clear about having your own unique thing that you would like to say with whatever device it is you're using.
Yeah. So the process that you talked about was sort of this whole, quite an organic sort of process of sitting there going, oh, I'm working with the brain sensors. How's this working? How can I start to visualize it? Mm-hmm. How is mm-hmm. that process of developing an installation for someone to experience different for you to developing a choreographing a piece?
How is it different from creating a choreographic piece? Oh gosh, it is so, this is so different. So one thing that, in one way that I feel like I've been very, very changed through this process is, you know, for my work as a choreographer, it was highly, highly designed. So, you know, there weren't like improvised sections. It was all choreographed. And when I'm making an interactive piece, there's a certain letting go that has had to happen as part of the process, where I have a system and, you know, I've been embracing ideas about how we don't really have all of the control that we think we do. I am very, very interested in ideas of why we perhaps do not have free will at all. I find this a very fascinating subject that I read about quite a lot and think about. So this is also reflected in the work, is that I can set up a system, but in reality, in life, there, you know, how much of it can I actually control? And to relinquish is I'm giving into something that feels natural and true. So I'm very happy to simply set up a framework that will, yeah, like facilitate an idea, a message, or an experience. But you know, but then after that, it's not, all I can do is suggest. As I've said before, like I'm not overly didactic with my work. People are free to have different experiences with the work, and people's bodies are different, so they will have, so it'll look slightly different depending on their body, and yeah, and that's all okay.
As you're talking, it's lovely to hear. It's almost like you found a freedom from yeah, ballet in some ways.
Or it's just I've had the opportunity to see life in a different way. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What are you currently working on?
Yeah. So now I'm trying to augment the experience with actually adding sound. So I've been taking my brain data. I can save the data as like a table of numeric data, and I've been converting that data to MIDI and then sculpting the sound. So creating musical pieces from essentially unwilled motifs. And So that's a funny collaboration, because I'm in collaboration with myself. I'm not like, my body is, creating sort of the base template to work with. And then that's what I have to work with. So it's a strange thing to feel like I am both the subject and object in this endeavor. So like philosophically, that's a little funny. I'm both subject and object. And then also I'm working on how to do that in a live sense. So just experimenting with modular synthesis and then connecting myself through the sensor to that, and then seeing how I can sculpt sound in real time, and then I'll see where that goes.
Nice, a nice bit of experimentation. Yeah.
Oh, I've also, the other thing that I've been working on maybe a little more is being a bit more deliberate about the connection between the brain activity and the effect of the visuals, and maybe trying to bring a little more, trying to bring some poetry into that as well. So, yeah, like where you are, you can be a bit more cognizant of what your brain activity is doing by virtue of like how, what you're seeing visually happen. So it's a more, pointed conversation that you're having with yourself in the experience.
So it's more agency for the participant.
Yeah. Or just more self-knowledge.
What's your advice for other people thinking about doing similar work?
Oh gosh. So this is also what I tell students when I have the opportunity to teach is that, you know, you are the creative being, and no doubt you have important things to share with people. So you shouldn't worry about whether you have a technical background or not. If you would like to use the tools of today, just pick them up and try them and say what you need to say and use the tools that meet those that voice what you would like to communicate with others. So I have, you know, I spent my life in a dance studio. I didn't even own a computer for a very long time. So, you know, I don't have a computer science background. I really went from nothing, but, you know, these tools were something that I felt like they were necessary for me to continue to grow and to communicate the ideas I wanted to communicate, and for me to just keep learning learning about existence myself. Like, these were all great tools that, I wanted to avail myself of. So I would just, my advice to people is to not be intimidated. That, again, you don't have to be the best programmer in the world. You just have to say what you want to say with precision and to your satisfaction aesthetically. So just to be true to your own message and your aesthetics, and that, believe me, I have learned quite quickly that the learning never, ever ends. So there is always new software and new techniques, and that is an endless, endless journey. So don't get too intimidated or hung up on the fact that you might be at the beginning of the journey, because it's going to last for your lifetime. So happily, so if not frustrating sometimes.
Thank you. That's a lovely wrap up.
Oh, thank you.
As I've been editing this interview and thinking about the conversation, a few key things come to mind. Interactive experiences can be powerful feedback loops for participants, for self-awareness. David Rokeby calls these interactive experiences as transforming mirrors. I need to do a bit more thinking about this, and I might try to even work on a piece of writing about it as well. One of the things I found really interesting in the way Nora thought about this piece was the way the experience was layered. There's the individual experience for the person wearing the headset, but also she was very mindful of the experience of the participants who weren't wearing the headset and how that interrelationship actually happens. As I said in the intro as well, I think one of the really key insights and one of the things that's interesting for someone to hear someone talking about is it's coming to interactive installations, is an interactive experience is a system that we don't completely control as artists. Nora talks about it a couple of times, and I think it's a really good mindset that we don't need to be the best at the technology. We don't need to be the best at coding. We just need to be able to know how to use the tools to be able to do what we need to achieve. There is always more to learn, but we do need to make sure we focus on what we want the tools to achieve. Thank you so much for listening to the Creating New Spaces show. If you got value from this, chances are that other people in your community will. Please share the link to the show with your colleagues and friends, or mention the show on social media.